The racial reckoning in this country continues after a traffic stop outside Minneapolis, another in Virginia. It's going on in courtrooms, corporations, a demand for a clear-eyed look at systemic racism, which exists no matter how many white people say they know black people, love black people, adopt black people. Yes, a reckoning in mixed-race adoptions is playing out on the wildly popular TV show This Is Us. In this flashback scene, a preteen Randall, who is black, confronts his formerly blue-collar, loving, white adoptive dad, Jack, who's taken him to play golf. Randall reminds his dad they once went to a martial arts dojo.
Do you remember that dojo that we went to a few years back with all the other black families?
Yeah.
We went a few times, but then we stopped.
You said you didn't want to learn karate anymore.
Yeah, but you won't let me quit soccer or baseball. You don't want me to quit golf.
I don't quite follow you here, Randall.
You just don't get it.
What don't I get?
What you said before about feeling weird at some country club golf course.
Okay.
You felt uncomfortable at a golf course, and I probably wouldn't have even been allowed on it.
I don't look at you and see color. I see my son.
Then you don't see me, Dad.
That's our next guest reacting to that scene from This Is Us. And well-meaning, loving, white, liberal adoptive parents who fail their black children are also the subject of Rebecca Carroll's searing new memoir, Surviving the White Gaze, about growing up the only black person in her town in rural New Hampshire. Her parents also said they didn't see color. Her white birth mother actively undermines her blackness. And Rebecca Carroll joins us now. And first, have I got that about right? My summation.
Yeah.
And I think I heard a hue when you were listening to the This Is Us scene.
Yes, yes. Which, I mean, might as well have been me in that conversation. But Randall had the wherewithal, whereas I really struggled to sort of have the language to contextualize that I felt like I wasn't seen.
Yeah. Well, let's stay with you and who you were as a child. There's a couple of early references that just break my heart. A teacher in grade school tells you you're pretty. And then she says, you know, for a black girl, because usually they're ugly.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing. The cognitive dissonance was enormous because my parents and their sort of white liberal artist friends all thought that I was really beautiful. You know, I was precocious and I loved to dance and to perform and I loved fashion. And so I thought that I was beautiful. And so when my teacher said that I was pretty, what I internalized was what she said afterwards, right? Was that most black girls are ugly, very unattractive. I remember distinctly the way she scrunched up her face. The seed had been planted where I was like, wait a minute, something is awry here.
Yeah.
My white adoptive parents sort of raised us in this bucolic bubble, beauty and art and fresh flowers and tea. And so when we left that bubble, you know, my brother and sister, who are my parents' biological children, sort of went about their business, wherein I, within 2 years of leaving that bubble, am suddenly the target of racism.
Well, the Pearson family in This Is Us, they think they're doing the right thing. We don't see color.
Right.
And you're saying, I need you to see my color.
Yes, because the message therein is the only way I will love you or find you valuable is if I strip you of something that is so integral to your identity. But then it's also saying, we're not thinking about the way in which the world is perceiving you and the way this country has been killing people who look like you.
Look, we'll take up some of these heavy issues, but there's also the practical ones. What to do with your hair? And you were 6 years old when you first met your first fellow black person. This is a ballet teacher that you adored. She knew these things. She knew, you know, your skin might get ashy, and she knew about skin creams and makeup and hair. And she inspired your very first essay. You wrote, "My name is Rebecca Ann Carroll, and I am a black child."
I remember that I had to write it down, and that was maybe one of the earliest moments, if not the first moment, where I turned to writing as a way to make things real. But in that particular moment, it was me telling myself or my family or whoever was going to read it that I'm Black. I had to tell myself that.
Yeah. Well, and that world that they didn't warn you about was right outside your door. There's a boyfriend's father who won't allow any prom pictures of him with you.
He was not a boyfriend. I never had boyfriends because all of the white boys,
that's right,
their parents wouldn't allow them to date me. So this
okay,
was just a friend.
Who goes to the prom with you, right? Yeah, right,
yeah.
Right. Is this also the teacher?
He was our history teacher. One day we were talking about slavery and the benefits of slavery to capitalism. And I raised my hand and I said, but is the dehumanization of people really worth it? Something along those lines. And he said, well, see, now that's your problem. Black people don't know how to think right. Like, and even his sentence was like grammatically incorrect, right? And I just remember being so stunned by that.
In addition to a family at home that, by the way, you know, they didn't want to see color. They also probably didn't see a lot of things. They also were practicing open marriages. They didn't have a lot of time, it sounds like. You weren't grounded in anything. So that's another aspect of your family. But then you meet your birth mom. And it was stunning to hear this white birth mother do the opposite of your parents. She seemed to only see your color and belittled you for it. She called you a token. She said people are making you exotic and they're making you think you're special and you're really not. I can't. What was that about?
I mean, I have really tried to decenter her in my brain and in my life. And so what I was able to do and to write about regarding her is on the pages of the memoir. But as I've written, you know, she clearly was unhappy with who I presented myself as when we reunited at 11, by the way, which was way too young. I just wanted to know her and be in her orbit. She was so beautiful and charismatic, but she was also harshly judgmental and, you know, sort of decided that she was the authority on what it meant to be Black, and I did not fit that bill. It was a very, very toxic relationship.
Difficult to read. What impact did you think your whole childhood, adoptive parents who couldn't see your color, a birth mother who derided it, you know, the only Black child in a whole town. What impact did that have?
I think that I learned how to navigate a white world and learn to trust my instinct that I wanted to be in a Black world because I am Black. There were early, early yearnings and instincts, and there was nobody to sort of engage with me and to encourage me to follow those instincts. That took a great toll. And in my 20s, I was just treading water the whole time, trying to get out from under this white gaze. And by the time I caught wind of freedom, when I heard Toni Morrison use that phrase, the white gaze, I was exhausted.
You suffered depression, excessive drinking, suicidal thoughts. This was tough. Then you find Toni Morrison. You find a Black community in college. What are you saying for the white families hearing this now? They're going to read the book, I know, maybe recognizing, what didn't I do for my Rebecca? What can they do?
Well, the first thing is to lean into that sick to your stomach feeling, because that's the right feeling to have. And if you sit long enough in that feeling, you're going to find a way out of it, because nobody wants to feel that way.
Well, you're now married to a white man who's devoted his career to studying race. You have a son. I'm imagining there are the books of Zora Neale Hurston, maybe the photography of Gordon Parks. You know, is that what it is for? And again, this should not be your responsibility to tell white parents how to do best for their adoptive Black children. But is it not just leaning into that in your stomach, but jumping into the Black culture for your children?
No, it's definitely not jumping into it for your children. It's jumping into it with your children. And it's less about drawing attention to Blackness for a white parent's self. It is living amid Blackness as a way of helping to give that and recognize that within their Black children. That is parenting.
Are you saying, it doesn't sound like you are, that You don't think white parents should adopt black children?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I do. I have a piece in the Washington Post that is advice. You know, there are very particular things you should ask yourself before adopting black children, i.e., do you have any black people in your life? If you don't, think about that first. Mm. I'm not certainly discouraging it. I am asking white adoptive parents to think deeply and engage deeply with blackness, black culture, black history, and to consider that integral part of their parenting.
That's culture critic and essayist Rebecca Carroll. Her new memoir, Surviving the White Gaze, about growing up in a well-meaning liberal family in rural white New Hampshire. Rebecca, thank you so much. I read it in about, oh my gosh, one long night. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And we'll link you to her op-ed. And we'd love to hear your thoughts, because this is probably hitting home for a lot of people. So if you've navigated interracial adoption as a child or a parent, please send us an email at letters@hearnow.org.